Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, March 22nd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Craddock's HB 446 voted out of House Committee. Judiciary and Jurisprudence Committee votes 9-0 in favor of HB 446, referencing individuals with intellectual disabilities. By Stuart Doreen. A Texas House bill updating terminology when referring to individuals with intellectual disabilities has been voted out of the Judiciary and Jurisprudence Committee. Midland Republican Tom Craddock is the primary author of House Bill 446, and Midland's Kathleen Kerwin Haney has been a vocal supporter of the bill. The Texas Council for Developmental Disabilities said the following of HB 446. Although the phrase mental retardation was once used as a medical term, the R word is now widely considered to be outdated and offensive. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM-5, released in 2013, officially shifted medical standards to instead use the term intellectual disabilities. Kerwin Haney stated she testified to the House Judiciary and Jurisprudence Committee in favor of HB 446 to update the terminology when referring to individuals with intellectual disabilities on March 8th. The R word is hurtful, offensive, and simply unacceptable, Kerwin Haney stated in an email to the Reporter Telegram. Over time, this word has developed a negative connotation, and it is past time it is replaced. I am hopeful this effort will end with a positive outcome, as so far both Republicans and Democrats have agreed Texas needs to update language to give all Texans the dignity they deserve. The Judiciary and Jurisprudence Committee voted 9-0 in favor of Bill HB 446. The bill now moves to the Calendars Committee, where it awaits scheduling for consideration by the full Texas House. Its companion bill in the Texas Senate is Senate Bill 332. Advocating is seeing things that need changing and working hard to make improvements happen, Kerwin Haney said. It is my passion to speak up for our most vulnerable when they need a voice, and to follow through so that they may enjoy a better quality of life. I don't do these efforts alone, and am so grateful for the outpouring of love and support. Many who encourage me have loved ones of their own with intellectual disabilities, and this fuels me to keep fighting for a better day, in memory of my own special brother. During the 2021 special session, Haney worked with State Representative Brooks Landgraf on House Bill 119, which basically prevents discrimination when it comes to special needs individuals and organ transplants. Kerwin Haney's brother Daniel died at the age of 46 from renal failure. This article is entitled Midland Leads Nation in Job Growth by Stuart Doreen. No metropolitan area in the nation had a larger percentage gain in employment than Midland. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reported last week that the year-over-year gain in employment in the Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area during the month of January was 11.8%. Midland was the only metropolitan area with a gain of at least 10%. Odessa was second at 7.8%. Napa, California finished third at 6.9%, according to the BLS. Midland's 11.8% growth was more than twice the gain in employment across Texas, 5.1%. The BLS showed the number of employees on non-farm payrolls in the Midland MSA, not seasonally adjusted, rose from 106,100 to 118,200. In Odessa, That increase was from 73,900 to 79,700. Percentage increases around other metropolitan areas across West Texas included 5% in San Angelo, 4.3% in Abilene, 3.8% in Amarillo, and 2.7% in Lubbock, according to the BLS. Employees on non-farm payrolls across those MSAs included 157,500 in Lubbock, 126,900 in Amarillo, 75,800 in Abilene, and 52,200 in San Angelo. This article is entitled City: Talks Happening About Indoor Athletic Facility by Stuart Doreen. A new indoor athletic center could be part of the facilities available at the Scarborough Sports Complex and inside the City of Midland. City officials discussed preliminary conversations taking place that would see the city leasing land at the West Midland Sports Complex to private developers who want to build an indoor facility that would be home to as many as 6 basketball courts, 12 volleyball courts, and space for events like indoor soccer. It would be similar to the Dodge Jones Youth Sports Center in Abilene or the Apex Event Center in Lubbock, according to Lori Williams, Assistant Community Services Director for the City of Midland. Some of the other larger cities around us have that facility, Williams said. We just don't have it here in Midland yet, but there's definitely a need. This type of a facility has been on the radar of many in Midland, as the city does not have an indoor recreational/tournament facility on par with COM Aquatics, the Bush Tennis Center/Midland College Tennis Center, Chaparral Center, the athletic venues at the Scarborough Sports Complex, and the golf courses around Midland. An indoor facility would allow Midland to host basketball, AAU, and club volleyball tournaments. Earlier this month, an indoor facility, $15 million to $30 million, was talked about as a potential wish list item for city officials during a briefing session. During the Midland City Council's recent retreat, city leaders listed an indoor sport facility, partnership direction, and city actions as a high priority for 2023-24. We have long known that there's a need for indoor gym space and design, Williams said. And so we've had that on our radar to try to develop an indoor facility for many years. Williams said the facility, if the private project comes to fruition, will be located at the northeast corner of the complex, not far from the Hilton Garden Inn. It would be a great location with all hotels and that type of thing for tournaments, basketball and volleyball, that come in, Williams said. This article is entitled BlueMed Spa Owner is About Creating Positive Results by Ben Schaffer. BlueMed Spa Owner Myra Esparza wants her new business to evolve with the growing Midland. BlueMed, in Building 1, Suite 107 at 3300 North A Street, offers a wide range of non-surgical face and body services, including dermal fillers, chemical peels, wrinkle relaxers, lip fillers, and minor skin removals. Esparza had a business established in Odessa for 3 years, but decided to take a leap of faith and move to Midland to start BlueMed because of the financial standing of clientele and friendly locals. She opened BlueMed in early September of last year. BlueMed takes on clients from teenagers to adults, men and women. Esparza said she's passionate about creating positive results for clients. Seeing people's reactions after the procedure, I love to see that I could do something for them, she said. BlueMed's website says they are passionate about providing their customers with beauty, comfort, knowledge, and personalized attention. Faith plays a key role in Esparza's attitude toward her business. Her website has the Bible verse Colossians 3:23 stamped right underneath the mission statement. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Esparza said she looked to God to guide her in this new business venture and give her the understanding and knowledge of how to grow a successful small business. BloomMed is unique because of the exceptional customer service. Customers are treated with kindness and compassion during any and every procedure, according to Esparza. Additionally, while there are spas that charge a second fee for modifications or alterations of a previous procedure, Esparza said, BloomMed doesn't charge a client again if they're not completely satisfied with a service. Book online, BloomMedSpaByMyra.com. This article is entitled Revamped Fueling Station Planned for Northwest Walmart Lot by Mella McEwen. Expansion plans were taken under consideration by the Planning and Zoning Commission at Monday's meeting. Commissioners approved a request by Alan Perez to amend the PD, Plan Development for a Shopping Center, zoning, to update the site plan to reflect improvements for the Murphy Oil gasoline facility in the Walmart parking lot at Midland Drive and Briarwood Avenue. Perez submitted amended elevations and site plans to detail plans for the construction of a 1,400-square-foot retail service store that will replace the existing 122-square-foot store. A new 7,450-square-foot fuel pump canopy will replace the original 2,688-square-foot canopy, and four fuel pump islands will be added, bringing the total to eight. Hotel Restaurant Lounge to expand. Board members also approved a request by Alejandro Dominguez to amend the PD, Planned Development District for an Office Center zoning, to PD, Planned Development District for a Shopping Center, at 3100 West Wall Street. The request was made to allow for the expansion of Dominguez's Restaurant Lounge 880 in the Wyndham Garden Hotel. Dominguez plans to expand the restaurant from 2,751 square feet to 5,200 square feet and expand hours by opening at 11 a.m. on Sundays. Finally, commissioners approved a request by Roger Wells for a specific use designation without term for automobile or other motorized vehicle sales and service in order to construct a storage building at Rogers Ford, 4200 West Wall Street. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled Oil Snaps Oversold Streak as Markets Calm by Emmanuel John Milton, Bloomberg. Oil jumped the most since early February and restored key technical levels after U.S. government promises to protect bank depositors calmed markets. The commodity snapped its longest stretch of being oversold on the 9-day relative strength index since November 2021, as Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said the government could take drastic actions to protect depositors at smaller lenders. Crude prices were further boosted by Russia saying it will extend its 500,000-barrel-a-day crude output cut through June. Prices have been stuck in a narrow alley in 2023 before breaking lower as banking turmoil amplified recession fears. Still, senior figures in the industry predict prices rallying to range between $80 and $140 a barrel for the second half of the year. The Federal Reserve's interest rate decision on Wednesday and its expected effect on the economic environment is likely to move crude prices further, said Vikas Dwivedi, global oil and gas strategist at Macquarie Group Limited. If these big macro factors start to really turn the corner, oil will rally, Dwivedi said. This article was written with assistance from Julia Fanzeres.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, March 16th, 2023. Happenings. What's Up with Midland by Morgan Taylor Thomas. At the Blue Door. Hello, Spring. A Planter Pottery Workshop with Leslie Clay, March 21st. At the Destination. Open Mic Night, Thursday. Friday Night Live, Tomas Christian, Friday. Chase the Night, Saturday. Bring Your Own Blues Open Blues Jam, March 23rd. Friday Night Live, Monty Branham, March 24th. Jace Martin Band, March 25th. Friday Night Live, Damian Valenzuela. At Eccentric Brewing Company. Singer-Songwriter Night, Friday. Dave Martinez, Saturday. Shelton Rowling, March 22nd. Casey Greathouse, March 24th. Comedy Night, March 25th. Sam Choate, March 29th. Lee Harmon, March 31st. At the Hand Cafe. Coffee and Clay, a Mug Pottery Workshop with Leslie Clay, March 25th. At the Horseshoe, Permian Basin Comic Con, Friday through Sunday, Monster Truck Wars, Saturday, Roseland Oil and Gas Convention, March 22nd and 23rd, Whiskey Myers, March 31st. At La Hacienda Event Center, Los Enanitos Toreros, Saturday, Chase Matthews and Kid G, March 30th, La Zenda Norteña, Los Recoditos, La Zona X y Harry Franken, March 31st. At Midland Community Theater, Sense and Sensibility, March 24th through April 15th. At the Midland County History Museum, the Russell Lee Photographs Exhibition, now through April 8th. At the Midland Rose, Kirko Bangs, Saturday. At Museum of the Southwest, Downtown Market Farmers Market, every Saturday. At the Tailgate, William Beckman, March 24th, Cody West, March 25th. At Tall City Brewing Company, Tall City Beer Run, Thursday, PBAA Pet Easter Photo Shoot, Sunday, Boss Babes Market, Sunday, Girl Scout Cookie Pairing, March 25th. At the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, Yamato, The Drummers of Japan, Hinotori, The Wings of Phoenix, Thursday, Zach Williams, Friday, Chris D'Elia, March 24th, Maricela La Dama de Hierro, March 25th, High Tide, March 28th, Joanne Shaw Taylor, March 29th. Mike Massimino. At the UTPB Shepherd Leadership Institute Distinguished Lecture Series, March 30th. At Wagner Knoll. Chad Prather and the Ragamuffins, March 31st.
This is Thoris with the Odessa American News for Wednesday, March the 22nd. Headline is New Job Description Created for City Manager. The Odessa City Council formally adopted a new job description for the position of City Manager and gave T2 Professional Counseling the green light to advertise the position with the Texas Municipal League. The new city manager will be expected to have a bachelor's degree or higher in public administration, business administration, management, or a related field. In addition, they must have 3 or more years' experience as a city manager, assistant city manager, or as a department head in a city of similar size to Odessa. According to an old job description dating back to March 1998 and obtained under the Texas Public Information Act, the city manager should have a bachelor's degree in public administration, business administration, or a related field, but it is also noted the city preferred a master's degree in public or business administration. The city also required 10 years of increasingly responsible municipal government experience, with a minimum of 5 years of large city, 50,000 or larger, city manager or assistant slash deputy city manager experience. Unlike the old job description, the new also describes in explicit terms what it expects in a new manager when it comes to personal attributes. It states the manager possesses and acts with the highest level of integrity, must believe and practice doing the right thing no matter if someone is looking, works in an honest and ethical manner, obeying both the letter and spirit of the law, and leading by example and from the front. Sets the example that if something isn't right, it won't be done. If something isn't true, it won't be said. And if something isn't ours, it won't be taken. The job description goes on to say the city manager will take responsibility for their actions, consider their effect on others, is accountable for the financial and operational performance of the organization, and avoids placing the blame on others. In addition, they'll be able to make difficult decisions in a timely manner, rather relevant input, and will be comfortable leading up and expressing disagreement or concerns to the council when needed. The council also expects the city manager to maintain satisfactory working relationships. The job description also lays out the typical job duties expected of a city manager. The Odessa City Council voted 5-2 to fire City Manager Michael Marrero without explanation December the 13th. Marrero earned $238,000 a year and had a car allowance. Marrero spent more than 20 years with the city of Odessa. He was former city manager Richard Morton's top deputy, managing departments that deal directly with the public, apart from fire and police services. They included parks, public works, code enforcement, and planning and zoning. He spent more than 6 months as the interim city manager before being named the city manager in 2018. On Tuesday, the council agreed the new city manager will earn somewhere from $170,000 to $250,000. Any other perks will be negotiated at the time the position is offered. Although T2 originally expected to have a city manager hired by mid-July, early August, T2's Micah Lunt agreed with Councilmember Denise Swanner that it's possible to push up that timeline. The only hiccup would come if the city didn't get enough qualified applicants, Lunt said. The new job description was created after T2 conducted an employee survey, held a meeting with council members last week, and had council members fill out a quiz. T2 will now create a brochure marketing Odessa to possible candidates. Once applications are received, T2 will review their resumes to make sure they meet the minimum requirements, do a preliminary background, and check and send some initial questions. The candidates will be asked to answer some questions in writing and others orally, Lunt said. That's going to give us an idea of a number of things. One, it's going to start to assess fit right there. It certainly is going to assess communication skills, both orally and in writing, Lunt said. We will take those candidates from that group and identify what we believe to be the top candidates, and that will be the first time that we have a discussion as to who they are, and we'll present you with an executive summary up to that point. Once some of the candidates are weeded out, Lund said T2 will then put the remaining candidates through the Try Me Tricks assessment created by TTI Success Insights, a Scottsdale, Arizona company which boasts of having helped such companies as American Express, GE, Pepsi, Mercedes-Benz, and Volvo. At some point, more questions will be asked, another executive summary will be issued, and decisions will be made as to who will get the opportunity to meet with the council in person during an open meeting where residents will be allowed to ask questions, Lunt said. Once that happens, we would have an executive session discussion on whom you would like for us to start entering into negotiations with, and we would ideally, definitely want to have a number one and number two candidate so that we could work on that at the same time, Lunt said. Basin PBS launches Children's Lounge. While their parents await flights, children can keep busy in the Basin PBS Children's Lounge at Midland International Air and Spaceport. With representatives from Basin PBS, the Basin PBS Board, Midland City Council members, Permian Resources, and Midland ISD, a ribbon cutting, using caution tape, was held at the site across from the Southwest Airlines gates Tuesday. This is the first lounge of its kind in the nation, CEO/GM of Basin PBS, Laura Wolf said. Sponsored by Permian Resources and co-sponsored by Clear Channel, the lounge will provide a comfortable, safe space for families traveling through the airport with young children. Comfortable seating, age-appropriate educational games, a free little library, and a TV show educational programming are also among the features available. It's great. We're very proud to be a part of this and to work with the PBS to contribute to MAF, the airport, to the kids and to the local Permian area, said John Bell, Executive Vice President, General Counsel, Permian Resources. We're a young company with a lot of young families, and we pride ourselves on investing in the community as it relates to education and trying to do similar things to what PBS does, and supporting those causes is really what we stand for, Bell added. Wolf said finally getting the lounge in place was like a miracle. We are so happy it's done, and I can't thank Permian Resources enough for sharing the vision and sharing it with us. I just think of the hundreds and thousands of kids that are going to come through here and be able to watch Daniel Tiger to take a book. It's a great day for Basin PBS, Wolf said. She added that the city of Midland has been terrific in giving them the lounge space. Chuck Cooper, chief engineer for Basin PBS, said they would help maintain the lounge. They will sanitize every surface in the area, restock it with books, clean the iPads, make sure everything is functioning correctly with them, and check the TV and make sure it's working. The main idea is to keep it clean, keep it well-stocked, and make it a safe and productive area for children to spend time, Cooper said. The children can take the books on the plane with them. We do plan on additional enhancements at some time, maybe adding a few more apps to the iPads. Obviously, they have to be things that are approved for children and within the age ranges that we cater to. In this case, it's all ages, so it will skew a little younger versus older, Cooper said. MISD Director of Early Childhood, Andrea Messick, said the lounge is such a neat resource for families, especially since children are able to take a book for their flight. It will really allow our families to have access to more books and literature in their homes and on the flights as they travel to give their kiddos something other than just an iPad to focus on during their flight. Justin Ruff, Director of Airports, said the lounge will be great for the passenger experience. Travel is a very stressful time, so you have a way for them to de-stress before they get on the plane, Ruff said.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm continuing to read from the Odessa American, Wednesday, March 22, 2023. OC Board discusses purchases. OA News at OAOA.com. Purchasing truck trailers, mannequins, and stadium lights was discussed at the Odessa College Board of Trustees workshop Tuesday. The meeting will make the purchases official at their March 28th meeting. The trailers are for trucks purchased with a Permian Strategic Partnership grant to expand the truck driving program. The total cost will be $197,000 and include two flatbed trailers at $65,000 and three belly dump trailers at $132,000. The Permian Strategic Partnership announced a $3.5 million donation to the OC Trucking Program in January. Board Chair Gary Johnson said the trailers will arrive in about 4 to 6 weeks, but the trucks will take longer. Some will be at the campus on 8th Street, and others will be in Andrews and Pecos. Buying two Laerdal simulation mannequins for the new Wood Health Sciences building was also reviewed. The mannequins will cost a total of $229,862.16. Stadium lights for James Seagrass Stadium were also discussed. The total cost is $314,750. Funds will come from the Mackenzie Scott Donation Replacement Technology Fund from COVID, the Wrangler Club, and contingency funds. They will use $200,000 from Mackenzie Scott, $16,000 from the Replacement Technology Fund, $50,000 from the Wrangler Club, and $28,750 from contingency. The college also plans to move its electrical lineman program to property it owns near the main campus. Quick Hits, Lenten Service. Faith Fellowship Church, 1603 North Grandview Avenue, has scheduled a Lenten service and lunch from noon to 1 p.m. for today and March 29th. For more information, call 432-362-2549. Ninth Annual Oil and Gas Convention. Roseland Oil and Gas has scheduled an oil and gas convention from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. March 22nd and from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. March 23rd at the Midland County Horseshoe, 2514 Arena Trail in Midland. Storytime. Flowers. The Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled a storytime event at 10 a.m. today. Create a flower craft. Art Tales. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4919 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Art Tales from 2 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. today, April 5th, April 19th, May 3rd, and May 17th. Art Tales is a free art education program that highlights alternating children's stories. Bilingual Storytime. The Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled at 10 a.m. Thursday. Stories will be read in English and Spanish. From staff reports.
The local news roundup. Wrongful death suit filed. The family of an Andrews woman killed in a wreck in December have filed a wrongful death lawsuit. According to the lawsuit filed in Ector County District Court Monday, Misty Dawn Dorries, 37, was a passenger in a car being driven by Kent Taylor Alfred Beckett on December the 19th, 2022, when he failed to yield the right-of-way at SE 1500 and US 385 in Andrews County. The lawsuit alleges Odessa resident Rodney Dean Mann's pickup truck collided with the passenger side of Beckett's vehicle, causing injury to Dorries, who died at Permian Regional Medical Center in Andrews later the same day. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Dorries was not wearing a seatbelt, and Beckett and Mann were also injured in the crash. Dorries' father, Bobby, is suing Beckett, 25, and Mann, 59, on behalf of himself and Dorries' son. Also named as plaintiffs are Dorries' mother, Sheila Poole, and Felix Blackwood, the father of her daughter. The plaintiff's attorney, Jonathan Havens of Houston, claimed Mann and Beckett were grossly negligent in their actions and are seeking more than $1 million in damages. Odessian pleads guilty to aggravated assault charges. A 20-year-old Odessa man pleaded guilty to two counts of aggravated sexual assault of a child on the opening day of his jury trial Monday and was placed on 10 years deferred adjudication. According to Ector County District Court records, Joseph Michael Medina will also have to register as a sex offender. Medina was originally facing two counts of continuous sexual abuse of a child under 14. According to his indictment, he was accused of committing multiple acts of sexual abuse with 2 8-year-old children between June and October 2019. At the time of his arrest in November of 2019, he was 17. Ector County District Attorney Dustin Gallivan said the family of the victims were consulted and consented to the plea agreement being offered. Obituaries. Irma Louise Honeycutt, age 92, of Odessa, passed away on Saturday, March the 18th. Donald Jones Burry, 84, from Odessa, passed away on March the 16th. Michael Dean Lester, age 59, passed away on February the 11th. Carlos Riviera Alvarez, 72, of Odessa, died Thursday, March the 16th. Felipe H. Brito, age 77, of Odessa, died Friday, March the 17th. John Calvin Bronnow, Jr., age 64, of Odessa, died Sunday, March the 19th. Debbie Fromick, age 67, of Odessa, died Saturday, March the 18th. Justin Brian Graves, age 43, of Odessa, died Sunday, March the 19th. Mary Irene Jones, age 63, of Odessa, died Wednesday, March the 15th. Amparo Franco Lopez, 90, of Odessa, died Thursday, March the 16th. John R. Thomas passed away on March the 15th.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Primary biliary cholangitis of the liver. Dear Dr. Roach, I am an 85-year-old female who has had primary biliary cirrhosis of the liver for many years. I have been on 300 milligrams of Usodiol taken three times a day for all those years with no problems until now. I currently have severe itching all over my body. I am now taking 4 grams of clotestriamine a day to relieve this terrible itching, but after 2 weeks, I am not feeling any relief. Will this medication work? If so, how long before it does? Answer. Primary biliary cholangitis, many still refer to it by its former name, primary biliary cirrhosis, even though many people never get cirrhosis, is an autoimmune disease where the body attacks the bile ducts, leading to cholestasis, the lack of movement of bile. It is a rare disease, much more common in women and usually diagnosed in middle age. It can be found by screening labs or with symptoms of fatigue, jaundice, or itching. Urodioxcholine, uridodiol, first identified in bears, has been the mainstay of treatment with PBC and has improved the prognosis of this condition. It is used to slow progression of the disease and prevent the need for liver transplantation by preventing cirrhosis. Ursodioxcholine by itself may not treat itching particularly well, and nearly 80% of people with PBC will develop itching by 10 years of having the condition. Most people do well with the cholestyramine that you were given, although the dose necessary is sometimes a lot higher. The dose is usually increased over weeks, so when you go back to your liver specialist, they may increase the dose. Be sure not to take the urodexocholine near the time you take the cholestyramine. There are other options, including rifampin and naltrexone. If the cholestyramine does not work for you, also the itching in PBC sometimes comes and goes for no apparent reason.
This is the Dear Abby column. Woman might double down on romance with gambler. Dear Abby, my ex-husband and I separated 2 months after our wedding. Our divorce was final 5 months ago. After I left him, I started talking to a younger guy I had a lot in common with. However, he has a gambling problem and ended up stealing money from my Cash App. He eventually paid me back and has done everything in his power to get me to trust him again. We are both very attracted to each other. After he repaid the money, he told me he was in a very dark place and felt horrible about doing it. He says he loves me, and even though I tried fighting it, I love him too. But there are issues, the trust, the gambling, and the age gap. I'm 15 years older. He's still very young, and I know when I was his age, I wanted different things than I want now. I'm worried he'll lose interest in me because we are at different points in our life. We aren't exactly labeled a couple, but we act like we are. No one but very close friends of mine knows about our situation. Should I cut ties before my heart gets broken? Signed, Tentative in Wisconsin. Dear Tentative, the age difference may not be a deal breaker, but the fact that he stole from you should be. How is he dealing with his gambling addiction? Is he still gambling? Has he joined a support group such as Gamblers Anonymous to help him cope with it? Because you divorced after only 2 months of marriage, and now this, there may be something wrong with your man picker. Before you make any more big decisions about men, I suggest that you talk to a psychologist about why you seem to be rushing in and out of relationships. Dear Abby, I just found out my husband and our female friend of 18 months have been texting each other. Allegedly, according to my husband, it's about politics. My husband and I don't share the same political views. He says he has nobody to talk about politics. I don't understand why he doesn't talk about politics with his male friends. I find it suspicious that neither my husband nor this friend ever mentioned they were communicating with each other. I think he is going outside our marriage seeking validation from another woman. When I said it, he called me crazy, immature, and insanely jealous. I'm not. I think he's endangering our marriage because things can start innocently, and he's seeking something I can't give him. He knew my political affiliation before we married. Our marriage barely survived the last presidential election. Now this. Can I have some advice, please? Signed, Uneasy in Florida. Dear Uneasy, you're not crazy, immature, or jealous. You are a wife who is worried that her marriage is in jeopardy. If the three of you socialize together and the subject of politics comes up, engage with them diplomatically without allowing the conversation to degenerate into an argument. And suggest to your husband privately that since the texts are only political in nature, you would like to be able to look at them occasionally. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.